from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. For all the people listening right now, we have a lot to share with you today. If you have pain, we're going to show you the natural, non-toxic ways of relieving it without opiates or medications. Want to live a longer life? We have information on that as well. Cleaning up your brain, detoxifying it, we're going to share that as well. We only select information on this show that can be scientifically validated, coming from peer-reviewed journals. We cite the journals, and from respected institutions, we cite them as well. Also today, I'm going to focus most of my energy upon our food. And I'm going to do that with an original, in-depth investigative report on GMOs versus organic, and show you why we have been lied to through every single administration, protecting the interests of Monsanto and big industries that manipulate genetically our food, but never promote organic, even though the hypocrisy is every White House, from Clinton's through Bush's, through Obama, not this one, they eat organic. But evidently, we're allowed to eat and encouraged to eat genetically modified. Following that, I'm going to open the calls up so you can share your points of view, and then we're going to give you a 22-minute, really in-depth history of Bayer and Monsanto. Now, I used to think it was pronounced Bayer, B-A-Y-E-R. Turns out it's Bayer. B-Y-E-R is the pronunciation. But in any case, we have the definitive explanation of how bad they are, why they're the most hated corporations in the world, and why we should not support them on any level. And this is a Colbert report. You won't see it or hear it anywhere else. You can watch today's show, and you certainly want to watch that by going to Progressive Radio Network Facebook. And just over the weekend, I want to thank the, 12,000 people downloaded the show. So that's just one show. And that's just at night. If you want to download shows at night and listen to them, you can, with one phone call over your computer site, cell phone, you can download up to 5 programs or whole weeks of program. This is the number, 710-719-9976, 710-719-9976. So let's begin. This is from the Hospital for Special Surgery in New York. It's current as of today, and it shows that there are complementary approaches, such as meditation, helping patients manage chronic pain. Now, complementary practices like meditation and mindful breathing help patients manage chronic pain and, in some cases, reduce the need for medication such as opiates. This is according to the study at the Hospital for Special Surgery. Researchers reported the following, and this is all good news, that 98% of the patients strongly agreed that they were satisfied with the program. 95% said the program increased their understanding of complementary treatments and the ability to apply techniques to manage pain and stress. 93% indicated that they would recommend the program to others. And 1 out of 3 participants reported using alternative techniques 5 or more times in the previous week in place of medication. So, mainstream institutions, highly respected, publishing in peer-reviewed journals, are now agreeing with what you've been learning for all these decades. And that's important. Now, just as one follow-up to that, just 2 weeks ago, we completed a very important retreat. It was a WBAI, my 42-year residency, and hosting the program at noon over WBAI. And it was a fundraiser for them. And a lot of people had pain when they came. In fact, one of the people was in so much pain that when I asked her on a scale of 1 to 10, she said it's a 10 plus. Now, pain that severe can really adversely affect your life. There was also a person, his name is Bill Thompson. And Bill, if you're listening right now, I don't know if he is or not, call in. Call in at 888-874-4888. And if any of the other people attended who were in pain when they came, but were in no pain when they left, we'd like to hear from you. I don't know if the people are listening, but Bill came with pain so severe that the doctors had given him opioids, but he had not taken them. He knew the side effects. He knew how addictive they were. And he had diabetic neuropathy. That's excruciating. He couldn't walk. In fact, he had to get down there in a wheelchair, and he thought he'd spend the whole time in a wheelchair. At the end of the week, he was actually up on a walker and walking around. Zero pain. No pain. Improvement in his neuropathy. Improvement in his blood sugar. One woman, are you ready for this? She dropped 140 points off of her blood sugar. She went to normal with no insulin. But for me, I was there on the last day, and I wanted to film it. So I did about 50 hours of filming. Because sometimes people say, but that's not possible. I heard you on the radio and I heard a testimony, and you can't do that. Nobody can reverse a disease in a week. They're right. It's not possible. I'm right. We've done it. So it's like Bannister saying, I just broke the 4-minute mile, and people saying, it's not possible. Well, it is. So I'm filming everyone, and I'm going to stream all that filming. You'll see what they did. You'll see their beginning. You'll see the end. You'll see their final day. And there was a couple. He hadn't eaten solid food in 2.5 years. He had a tube in his body. Now, these tubes are very dangerous because they're susceptible to bacterial infection. And he said he was constantly infected. He also had wasted away. Yeah, he looked like a skeleton. And he couldn't sleep because the only time he could feed himself was at night. And it took almost all night to feed himself. And he was in pain. His wife also was in pain. She said it was 10 plus. On the last day, and you will see this, I'm going to stream this in the near future as soon as our editors finish editing it. He could eat solid food. He was eating solid food all day. Complete meals. And she also had reduced her pain by 90%. Here's what I didn't know until that day in the final filming. When you are that crippled by infirmaries, you frequently think about ending your own life. And that was a discussion that they had had. And you think, wow, had they not come to this retreat, they might have ended their lives, because they couldn't take any more loss of quality of life and pain. And we have learned subsequently, Lou Ampanesi called me yesterday and said, good news, the man went to his physician, and the physician decided he no longer needed a feeding tube. This is after years of a feeding tube, that he is eating normal, and he's gained back 35 pounds. That's a lot of weight to gain back in what amounts to about 3 weeks. I think they were there for 2 weeks, so it'd be about, 3 weeks. That's terrific. So when people call in, if they call in, we'll put them on. So anyhow, you can reduce pain. Meditation is just one way to doing it. But there are also nutrients that can help you reduce pain. The most powerful nutrient you can take to reduce pain would be black cumin seed oil. It's very strong. I suggest that you dilute it in a smoothie and drink it 3 times a day. Also, curcumin at about 5,000 milligrams in the oil base is powerful. Cayenne pepper at 45,000 heat units, one capsule, 3 times a day. These help eliminate pain, and cat's claw, the herb, also helps eliminate pain. Green juices help eliminate pain. Next up, bioactive compound from the rhodiola plant improves memory. This is from the Leibniz Institute of Neurobiology in Germany, a very respected institution. What it means is this. In an aging society, more people are suffering from memory disorders. The progressive loss of memory severely impairs the quality of life of those affected. So far, no drugs are known to prevent age-related cognitive decline, but nutrients can. Phosphatidylserine, acetyl-L-carnitine, L-carnosine, resveratrol, the B-complex, methylated folic acid, methylated B12. There are nutrients that make a difference, including PPQ and NAD. But for the first time, a study conducted by scientists from the Institute of Neurobiology and Plant Biochemistry, published in the Journal of Science Advances, proved the memory-enhancing effect of the plant ester as the active ingredient from the medicinal plant rhodiola, R-H-O-D-I-O-L-A, rosea, R-O-S-E-A. So rhodiola, rosea, enhances memory. Another medicinal benefit of a plant that we don't use here, but boy, do they use it in the Caribbean. Now, I've been many times to Jamaica, Trinidad, Barbados, all the U.S. Virgin Islands, St. Kitts, St. Croix, St. Lucia, and the northern end of South America, including in Venezuela. And I've seen this in all of them. And it's common. People grow it in their backyard. Sour sop. Sour, S-O-U-R, sop, S-O-P, one word. It looks like a, comes like a green, about the size of an orange, but it's not round. It's more elongated with little tiny spines on it. Little, let's say, if you turn the golf tee upside down, that little part that goes in the ground, that's what it looks like. If you feel it, it feels like a prickly pear. Inside, it has a white flesh, lots of seeds. Well, what it does is this. It kills triple-negative breast cancer. Yeah. Now, down in the Caribbean, it's known that when people have cancer, you use the leaves, they boil the leaves, and they use the fruit. Well, this was done at Seoul National University. The spiky fruit, the soursop, the annona, A-N-N-O-N-A, mercala, M-U-R-I-C-A-L-A, or cata. It's not only part of the tree that has anti-cancer properties, its leaves can produce an extract that Korean researchers say is able to stop the triple negative breast cancer from developing or spreading. Their experiment, the cancer cells, the breast cancer subtype, even began to die off. The extract reportedly triggers a pathway unique to this subtype that causes cancer cells to break down. The triple negative breast cancer is called such as for the absence of the three biological markers that identify the other subtypes of disease. It makes up about 12% of all patients with breast cancer, and it's very aggressive. It reoccurs more often and has a higher chance of invading the liver and the brain. So something that's natural, inexpensive, and non-toxic. The leaves of soursop, you can get them as an extract also. But just eating the soursop is also good. I was asked last night by a friend, what about this NAD? It's very hard to get now. Yeah, it is, in no small measure, because a lot of people in this audience have been using it, and rightly so, as an anti-aging molecule. What does it do? Well, it gets a boost from blocking an enzyme. And that's important. And there's new research in Lausanne, France, about this. And the NAD is a nicotinamide, adenine dinucleotide, NAD. It's a major player in nutrition. And studies have shown that NAD concentrations decrease as we age, and that recovering the body's level of NAD can prolong both health and our lifespan, making it focus the research on being a number one type of anti-aging nutrient. And in terms of biology, NAD is what is known as a coenzyme. That's a necessary molecule that helps an enzyme carry out its respective reaction in the cell. And NAD is a common coenzyme for multiple metabolic enzymes across all living cells, meaning that it is heavily involved in producing energy and keeping cells alive and healthy. Also, a healthy lifestyle cuts your risk of stroke, irrespective of genetic profiling. This is the British Health Ministry and the United Kingdom Biobank. And people at high genetic risk for stroke can still reduce their chances of having a stroke by sticking to a healthy lifestyle. In particular, not being overweight, and this is according to the British Medical Journal, was published, not smoking, and a plant-based diet. So even if you're genetically susceptible, you can change the genetic sequence of incidence, reduce your risk, by having a healthy lifestyle. Also, we're now, in just a moment, I'm going to take a break because I want to make sure I get this commentary in. So I'm going to do just one more thing on health and nutrition, and then we'll take a break. Hot baths could improve depression as much as exercise. This is according to the University of Freiburg Medical Center, which is in Germany. So taking a hot soak in a bathtub, I would suggest with Epsom salts, and with about 5 drops of lavender in the oil, the lavender oil in the water, can help with depression. This was a study that found afternoon baths just twice a week produce a permanent lift in your mood. And the size of the benefit was similar to that seen with physical exercise, which, of course, I've recommended for a long time. So what if you exercise in the morning and then you took a bath in the afternoon? That would be the ideal. So do both of those. It can make a difference. So we're seeing a lot of positive change, at least in small groups of people, and we need to do that. One last thing, and this is from the University of Texas in San Antonio. Stress can impair your memory. Stress can reduce your brain size in middle age. So if you're in your 40s and 50s with higher levels of cortisol, that's the hormone I talk about that's linked to stress, you're going to end up with poor memory and cognitive skills. The more stress you're under, the higher cortisol level, and that's associated with smaller brain volumes. And this was published in the journal Neurology, the medical journal for the American Academy of Neurology. So remember, stress is a killer, but before it kills you, it adversely affects your cognition and your brain size. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. We're 19 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break and come back. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting video streaming live from our studios in New York City. Watch it by going to Progressive Radio Network, Facebook. Also, the articles that I've written, along with our scholar-in-resident, Richard Gale. Just this week, this is the third in 1 week. We've never done 3 original, in-depth investigative reports, fully footnoted, and presented in 1 week in the history of this program. Next week, I have 3 more original articles. Also, we are presenting an activist author, investigative journalist, Helen, and we have loaded her articles up. And I just want to mention that any citizen journalist who is working on stories that needs a forum, as long as your information can be validated and is properly resourced and is objective and fair, we will broadcast it and we will post it, and we have a huge downloading. Just my show alone, over 100 million downloads. So the word will get out. And so if you want a forum, and we review every article, both for its scholarship accuracy and then legally. So now we're posting, I think today we'll have 14 separate articles on Wikipedia, and now we get serious. The next article that you'll see next week on Monday on Wikipedia, it will get their attention, that I promise you, and the media's attention. It's important that people in this audience download these articles and send it to the media saying, why can't you do this? Why did they have to find all this material? Why couldn't you? Let's start sharing it with our legislators, states, attorney generals. And we have received a lot of calls from people inside sharing very comprehensive information. I mean, details that we have not yet released about Jimmy Wells and Wikipedia. You'll be hearing about it, I promise, in the very near future. So if you have stories, let us know. I'm going to go to our commentary in just a moment, but we have someone who just called in. I believe her name is Karen. Hi, Karen. You're on the air.
Hi, Gary. How you doing?
I'm always excellent.
Great. I'm excellent lately, too, after that retreat. It was amazing. When I came to your house in Texas, I was in a lot of pain. And being in the nature and being quiet and self-actualizing, I came a long way. I wasn't able to hardly walk when I got there. And now I'm walking at least 2 miles a day. One day I did 5 miles. And it's been really great.
And how is your pain?
I have some, but nothing like I had before. And I know I'm going to work through it. So that's been doing really well. Yeah. Thank you again, Gary.
And your depression?
Lifting. Slowly but surely, you know, of course, that's a lifetime thing that I didn't realize I had. And I'm really working on it.
Good for you. I'm glad to hear that you're making progress, Karen.
Yeah, thank you, Gary.
And what was the most remarkable progress you saw of the other guests? Just give us one example.
Just their whole attitude. It was like so uplifting to watch everybody with the exercise and the changing and the eating habits. It seemed like a lot of them were new people that came around, and it's always great to see that.
Does anyone stick out in your mind?
Oh, you had amazing people there. Well, of course, the one guy with the COPD and... that was dying the last time he was there. I mean, that was remarkable. And I met the couple that you're talking about, and that's really great news that they're doing so well. I mean, everybody there was just really nice and really ready, it seemed like, to work on themselves.
Did you see Bill Thompson, who was out there each day?
Yeah, I was glad that you asked me if I could give him a ride, because I didn't get to meet him until that day. Yes. I saw that he couldn't walk, and I saw him walking.
He hadn't walked in a year.
Wow.
And now he's walking every day. And
great.
He was in excruciating pain. Now he's in no pain, zero pain.
That's great. Yeah, he told me that he stayed off the medicines, and that was a wise choice.
Also, did you see Susan Kyle, the... I think she's 76 or 77, walked 26 miles.
I did. Every time I saw her, she was walking and smiling. Wow.
Now, on Friday morning, she walked 26 miles, as did the person with COPD. He walked 26 miles.
amazing things happening.
Some wonderful things happen when you're ready. When you're ready for the change you need, and there's a support team to help you, you can take that next step. Thank you, Karen, for calling in. I'm Gary Noll. That's all the time we're going to have for calls today because I want to make sure we get the rest of the information in. I'm going to share with you now information that challenges the government and major industries' position on genetically modified foods. This article, which is currently posted online, is called GMOs, The Lie That Won't Go Away, by scholar in residence Richard Gale and myself, and published in its entirety on Progressive Radio Network. Recent news on the GMO front includes a harsh warning to consumers who purchase genetically engineered foods and products containing GMOs. The ruling by a San Francisco court in favor of Dwayne Johnson, a groundkeeper with cancer, against Monsanto, has set a precedent for cases against the agrochemical industry. In effect, the jury's ruling means that Monsanto's Roundup herbicide glyphosate is now legally recognized as a health hazard and a carcinogen. Here's the problem. I'll bet everyone in this audience has traces of this in their blood. Approximately 8,000 other victims of Monsanto's Roundup are now lining up to sue the biotech firm, now owned by the German agrochemical company Bayer, but actually spelled Bayer. I'll bet many of you have been pronounced it Bayer aspirin, but it's not Bayer, it's Bayer aspirin. Now, in the last day, a federal judge agreed to uphold the verdict, but brought the amount down to, I think it was $76 million. Bayer stock tanked because Bayer bought Monsanto for, I think it was around $63 to $67 billion. And imagine now the stock lost over $63 billion in value. It's tanking. And yet they have a minimum of 8,000 lawsuits and probably triple that amount with other law firms getting involved in class action lawsuits. So we may see, it is entirely possible to see the bankruptcy of Monsanto and Bayer. Although this is great news for consumers, the Trump administration is deaf, blind, and dumb. That's just him alone, but his entire administration know nothing about the truth of GMOs and their environmental hazards and severe health risks. And they have been aggressively promoting the dumping of more toxins on Americans. In April of 2017, President Trump signed an executive order to eliminate, quote, unnecessary regulations that would hinder the economic growth of the largest agrochemical corporations. This means a faster approval process for new biotech crops and pesticides. Trump has surrounded himself not only with Wall Street stooges, but with shills for the agricultural industry. He has met privately with the heads of Bayer and Monsanto, but Trump and his GOP minions are not content with advancing Bayer and Monsanto's interests in the United States. During a Congressional House Science Committee last February, the GOP took up the industry's cause and threatened to cut off funding to the World Health Organization for labeling Monsanto's glyphosate as a carcinogen, what the majority of our legislators repeatedly ignore and deny is the hard science behind GMO's myth. And by the way, it was Barack Obama and Bill Clinton, George Bush Sr., but it all started with George Bush Sr., who gave the green light to GMOs. And every president since then has supported GMOs. And it was Obama who, working with Michael Taylor, former top person at Monsanto, now top person at the FDA, who gave the passage of the DARC Act, which protects Monsanto. So the original foundation of agricultural biotechnology was to advance sales of pesticides by engineering crops to become immune to toxic spraying. And while weeds and insect pests could be eradicated, targeted crops would be spared, thereby allowing farmers to spray massive amounts of toxic chemicals on soy, corn, cotton, sugar beets, and other agricultural foods without injury. This was the assumption that led to the agrogenetic revolution. Only during the past decade, with more and more GM products in our diets and more farm acreage being sprayed with glyphosate and other toxic pesticides and herbicides, are the real long-term health effects to animals and humans and the environment becoming more fully recognized within the scientific community. The extent of pesticide runoff into rivers and streams and reservoirs means humans are now being exposed to life-threatening chemicals every hour of the day. It was never the mission of Monsanto and the cartel of agrochemical seed companies to increase yields and produce drought-resistant crops. That was a ruse. The evidence of higher GM crop yields was an afterthought. However, data from independent research now confirms that the years of higher GM yields are short-lived and drop dramatically thereafter, leaving far below yields from traditional organic farming methods. In a major scientific paper published by Earth Open Source called GMO Myths and Truths, an evidence-based examination of the claims made by the safety and the efficacy of genetically modified crops, King's College molecular geneticist Professor Michael Antonio, molecular biologist John Fagan, and GM Watch's Claire Robinson outlined the known health risks associated with glyphosate. They are, listen carefully, DNA damage, premature births and miscarriages, birth defects including neural tube defects, and also absent parts of the brain and skull, multiple myeloma, non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, disruption of the neurobehavioral development in children, including attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Now, since the release of the study in the journal Entropy, a researcher at MIT and a member of the Union of Concerned Scientists has discovered that glyphosate is in fact taken up by plants from the soil and found in our food, an accusation Bayer and Monsanto continues to deny. The study reports that the negative impact of glyphosate accumulation, quote, is insidious and manifests slowly over time as inflammation damages cellular systems throughout our body, end quote. In addition to links with problems ranging from cancer to infertility, a connection may also be made to the rising number of adults acquiring Parkinson's disease. A couple of earlier studies on individual cases found correspondence between glyphosate exposure and the onset of Parkinson's. There are now growing concerns that glyphosate consumed by mothers and infants in genetically modified tainted foods might be contributing to the autism epidemic that continues to worsen every year and now affects 1 in 50 children. And with each passing year, the body of scientific data challenging the safety of glyphosate expands. In several peer-reviewed studies that we examined in detail and conducted by researchers Andreas Carseco at the University of Buenos Aires, glyphosate was observed to cause teratogenic impairment of neural signaling and microencephaly, leading to a cardiofacial malformations in the cranium. In early 2014, the International Journal of Environmental Research and Public Health published a study linking glyphosate runoff in Sri Lanka's water systems to an epidemic rise in fatal, unknown chronic kidney disease. And until recently, scientists were unable to find evidence of what was causing this new illness. Similar observations have been made in El Salvador, in Nicaragua, where more men die of this, what is called CKD, which is chronic kidney disease, than AIDS and diabetes and leukemia. However, in each regional population studied, Roundup, the pesticide, is rampant in its usage. Sri Lankan scientists hypothesized that glyphosate, originally discovered to act as a chelating chemical in 1964, takes up toxic heavy metals and binds them in the kidney without the body's detection. According to the researchers, the buildup of these heavy metals in the kidney ultimately leads to kidney failure and kidney death. In early 2014, the Ministry of Health in Cordoba, Argentina, noted a dramatic rise in deaths from cancerous tumors, twice the national average. It just so happens that the elevated cancer rates of malignancies were being reported in only those regions where genetically modified crops and toxic agrochemicals like Roundup are most widely used. GMO's health risks to animals and humans are also being reported more frequently in the scientific literature. And corporate agro studies claiming GMOs are safe generally rely upon a research methodology that supplies a variety of so-called reference diets to the animals under investigation. These convoluted studies are designed intentionally to produce an abundance of data without any standard reference control group. This enables corporate scientists to conflate and distort results. This common industry practice was exposed by Claire Robinson at GM Watch regarding a published DuPont study on the safety of its Roundup Ready canola. Robinson pointed out that, quote, poor experimental design is intentionally utilized to cover up toxic effects. A Dr. Eric Seralini at the University of Caen identified changes in gene expression in sperm cells capable of altering androgen and estrogen sex hormones. The study suggests that glyphosate may be altering the human reproduction system. The rate of male infertility in the United States has been dropping steadily since GMO foods started to saturate the average American's diet. The most recent figures published by the Icahn School of Medicine at Mount Sinai indicates the average sperm count in men has decreased as much as 60%. And Dr. Seralini's earlier paper revealed a correlation between severe kidney and liver damage, advanced tumors, and premature death in rats fed Monsanto's NK603 maize. His paper has undergone more scientific review and scrutiny than any other study, either proving or disproving GMO safety. And with its republication, the paper should officially replace Monsanto's flawed safety study alleging the health safety of its NK603 corn. Seralini's most recent study showed glyphosate adversely alters the gut microbiome in rats. A proliferation of pathogenic bacteria and a decrease in healthy bacteria were observed. Bayer Monsanto must rely on a veil of secrecy, claiming this is needed to protect its proprietary information in order to avoid revealing to the public its actual GMO safety data. And lacking credible science to engage in an honest debate with the scientific community opposing GMO proliferation, the company must resort to the lowest and most vicious tactics, attacking the integrity of scientists, launching smear campaigns against GMO labeling advocates and organic farmers, and cyber attacks on anti-GMO organizations, and threats of lawsuits against state governments and media outlets advocating or even suggesting mandatory labeling are becoming more frequent. Now, I'm going to stop here. You can read the rest of the article by going to our website, and it's probably double what I've just shared. It's fully footnoted. It has been fully vetted for accuracy and by our team of attorneys. And read it and share it. Share it everywhere you can. This information needs to get out because the average American is not buying organic. They're buying GMO foods, and they should know the health consequences to them and their families. So please pay attention to this. Now we're going to go directly to you won't be able to hear it all, but you can watch and hear it, but you will be able to download it by going to prn.fm, and you'll see the whole thing. This is a special report, a Corbett report, on Bayer and Monsanto, and why they're the most hated corporations in the world.
Today I'm happy to announce that this Thursday, Bayer will complete the acquisition of Monsanto. This is good news for several reasons. It's first of all good news for our customers, the farmers around the world, no matter what type of agriculture.
If you had told someone 2 decades ago that by 2018, the company that commercialized chemical warfare and the company that commercialized Agent Orange were going to team up to control a quarter of the world's food supply, chances are you would have been labeled a loony. Unless your name was Robert P. Shapiro. He was CEO of Monsanto from 1995 to 2000, and in 1999, he told Business Week that the company's goal was to wed three of the largest industries in the world, agriculture, food, and health, that now operate as separate businesses. But there are a set of changes that will lead to their integration. With this month's announcement that Bayer had completed its $63 billion acquisition of Monsanto, it is hard to deny that Shapiro's vision has been realized. Too bad for all of us, that vision is a nightmare. Because, contrary to the feel-good corporate propaganda being churned out by the company's PR department, propaganda that would have you believe that this merger will be good for the environment, for farmers, for ending global hunger, and, incidentally, for lining the pockets of shareholders, these two corporate giants are in fact committed to the consolidation and transformation of the world's food supply in the hands of the genetic engineers. Monsanto and Bayer are a match made in hell. This is the Corbett Report. It is hardly surprising that the first thing Bayer did after completing their takeover of Monsanto earlier this month was to announce that they were dropping the Monsanto name, merging the two companies' agrochemical divisions under the Bayer Crop Science name. After all, as everyone knows, Monsanto is one of the most hated corporations in the world.
In the film Food Evolution, Neil deGrasse Tyson notes that Monsanto is one of the most hated companies in the world. Why do people have such strong feelings toward Monsanto?
The worldwide march against Monsanto has drawn hundreds out onto the streets here in New York City, with people seizing the opportunity to voice their concerns and opposition to GMO foods.
Why are you here?
I am here because I have a loathing hatred for the company Monsanto, which a lot of people don't know that Monsanto is actually just a chemical company and they have no business basically dictating our food supply.
New at noon, the city of Seattle is suing biotech giant Monsanto to make it pay for removing cancer-causing chemicals in the water. The city says the company knowingly dumped the compounds in the city's drainage system and the Duwamish River for years. Seattle needs to build a stormwater treatment plant to clean the system. That will cost about $27 million. Six other major municipalities sued Monsanto as well.
Environmental lawyers have begun filing lawsuits against Monsanto for cancer deaths related to their product Roundup. What these lawsuits are showing is an effort both on the part of Monsanto and the U.S. government to minimize the message about the dangers of Roundup in relationship to human cancer.
Now your bullseye is on Monsanto. Why is Monsanto so crucial to this fight over seeds?
Monsanto is crucial to this fight because they are the biggest seed company now. Monsanto is privatizing the seed. They control 95% of the cotton in India, 90% of the soy in this country. They've taken over most of the seed companies of the world.
This hatred of Monsanto is not unreasonable. It is, after all, difficult to think of a company that has ruined the lives of more people around the world, either directly through its coercive and litigious practices against small farmers the world over, or indirectly through the pollution of the food supply with their genetically modified crops. Many are familiar with the company's sordid past, including its role in the development of Agent Orange and its contribution to the epidemic of farmer suicides in India. But in recent years, Monsanto has gained special notoriety for its attempt to push the boundary of patent law in a self-admitted effort to gain a monopoly over the world's food supply. Even worse, Monsanto has, thanks to a revolving door with the highest levels of the U.S. government, been not just evil, but extraordinarily effective in spreading its evil seed around the world. That revolving door has seen literally dozens of top Monsanto executives drift in and out of the U.S. government agencies that, laughably, are said to regulate the agrochemical business, including Dennis DeConcini, the former U.S. senator who now acts as legislative consultant for Monsanto, Mickey Cantor, the Commerce Secretary under President Clinton, who also served on Monsanto's board of directors, Michael Taylor, Obama's deputy FDA commissioner who had previously served as Monsanto's vice president for public policy, Linda Fisher, who was appointed deputy administrator of the EPA in 2001, fresh off a five-year stint as Monsanto's vice president of government and public affairs, and U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas, who served as a corporate lawyer for Monsanto in the 1970s. These officials have helped smooth the way for Monsanto to achieve a number of key corporate objectives, including the passage of the infamous Monsanto Protection Act in 2013.
First off, President Barack Obama recently signed into law what many are calling the Monsanto Protection Act. Monsanto, the world's leading producer of genetically modified food, will benefit greatly from the bill since the legislation gives companies dealing in modified organisms and genetically engineered seeds immunity from federal courts. Nothing creepy about that. The bill states that even if future research shows that GMOs or GE seeds cause major health issues in consumers, the federal courts will have no power to stop their spread, use, or sale. Interesting to note, the bill carrying the Monsanto rider has virtually nothing to do with food, agriculture, or consumer health. It was inserted into a spending bill through lobbying efforts and the good work of freshman Senator Roy Blunt.
Well, congratulations, Mr. Blunt.
Well done.
Very good.
Maybe write him a letter.
I love Mr. Blunt because Monsanto's such a wonderfully, like, healthy, nutritious company.
Really looking out,
you know,
and it's amazing. The Center for Responsive Politics notes that Senator Blunt received $64,250 from Monsanto for his campaign committee between 2000 and 2000.
That had nothing to do with him making a protection bill or anything
not.
Like that. That was just purely good citizenry at work.
Of course. Mr. Blunt has been the largest Republican recipient of Monsanto funding as of late.
Oh, lovely. So basically, Mr. Blunt gave him an out clause. We don't know what these GMO seeds and all that crazy they do does. Sorry for the sailor talk, but, you know, we don't know what these cats do. They basically are poisoning, you know, the plants to kill bugs. And
their pesticides are actually killing the bee population. There's research to prove it. And now, because of this law, technically, we can't do anything about
it. Yeah, we can't go back as citizens. The government can't go back and sue them or hold them accountable for any of the actions that they've done. This is beautiful. This is wonderful politics as usual. You know, the old, pay-to-play kind of technique of, you know, we'll give you X amount of dollars, get you elected, and then help us out here.
But, ironically, of all the corporations in the world, Bayer is one of the few that could compete with Monsanto for its position as the world's most evil company.
There are two huge issues with this Bayer-Monsanto merger. The first is that it's going to raise food prices all across the United States and even beyond our borders. Farmers have already experienced a 300% price increase in recent years on everything from seeds to fertilizer, all of which are controlled by Monsanto. And every forecaster is predicting that these prices are going to climb even higher because of this merger. So we're going to have this massive price hike at a time when 14 million Americans have already been unable to provide food for their families. And then we're going to have this ethical problem that's plagued both of these corporations for decades. Let's start with Monsanto. This is a company that produced Agent Orange, which resulted in one of the largest human-induced health epidemics in modern history. They made dioxin. They created and distributed PCBs across the planet. And now pending litigation against them for Roundup is right there. Looking at their rap sheet would scare the heck out of anybody with a brain. They're in the business. Actually, really, when you drill down to it, it looks more like a cancer business. business than anything. They've been hit for false advertising and bribing public officials, then moved to Bayer. So we got Bayer and we got Monsanto. Moved to Bayer. This is a company that's joined at the hip with the Nazis during World War II. They produced a clotting agent for hemophiliacs in 1980s called Factor VIII. This blood clotting agent was tainted with HIV, and then after the government told them they couldn't sell it here, they shipped it all over the world, infecting people all over the world. That's the company. That's just part of the Bayer story. Right now, they're facing lawsuits over products like Yaz, Xarelto, Esure, Cipro. In fact, the company in 2014 annual report listed 32 different liability lawsuits that the company's now facing. So now you have the worst of the worst joining with the worst of the worst, and we have this magnificent experience of greed with these two huge corporations. This is a merger of evil, probably second only to the kind of merger that we'd see with DuPont and Dow Chemical. It's an ugly story. Again, the media is missing the point. They're not looking at all behind what these people are all, and they're people. These corporations are regarded as people. If these are people on a witness stand, it's going to be a very ugly cross-examination. These are people who should probably be in prison rather than engaging in mergers.
Although less well-known by the general public, Bayer's shameful history is, like Monsanto's, a case study in corporate psychopathy. Founded in 1863 by Friedrich Bayer and Johann Friedrich Vescott, it wasn't until 1899 that the company trademarked its most well-known product, aspirin. Less well-remembered is the fact that Bayer was the first company to trademark heroin, which they marketed as a non-addictive alternative to morphine and a cough suppressant. But it was under the stewardship of Carl Duisberg at the turn of the 20th century that the company began to develop its psychopathic character. In 1914, the German Ministry of War appointed Duisberg as one of the co-directors of a commission into the use of dangerous byproducts from the chemical industry. Unsurprisingly, Duisberg and his fellow directors jumped at the opportunity to turn their waste into profit by recommending the development of chlorine gas for use on the battlefield, a direct contravention of the Hague Convention respecting the laws and customs of war on land, which Germany had signed just 7 years earlier. Bayer, under Duisberg's command, did not just participate in the development and use of poison gas in warfare. They spearheaded it. Duisberg personally oversaw the earliest tests of poison gas and bragged about its lethal capabilities. The enemy won't even know when an area has been sprayed with it, and will remain quietly in place until the consequences occur. Setting up a school for chemical warfare at Bayer headquarters in Leverkusen, Duisberg also oversaw the development of phosgene and mustard gas, which he urged the German government to use. "This phosgene is the meanest weapon I know. I strongly recommend that we not let the opportunity of this war pass without also testing gas grenades." On April 22, 1915, Duisberg got his wish. On that day, 170 tons of chlorine gas was used against French troops at Ypres, Belgium, killing 1,000 and injuring a further 4,000. Attacks on the British followed days later. In all, some 60,000 people died as the result of the chemical warfare perfected by Bayer and urged on by Duisberg, one of the great, largely forgotten atrocities of the First World War. Most galling of all, Duisberg was not ashamed of his accomplishments. On the contrary, he was immensely proud of them. He even commissioned famed artist Otto Ballhagen to paint the scene of the earliest poison gas test at Cologne. Duisberg so enjoyed the finished result that he had it hung in his breakfast room at Bayer headquarters in Leverkusen. Later, Duisberg, inspired by a tour of Rockefeller's Standard Oil in the U.S., wedded Bayer to the IG Farben chemical cartel. As I explained in How Big Oil Conquered the World, IG Farben was a key player in the burgeoning oligarchy of the early 20th century, boasting key oligarchs like Royal Dutch Shell's Prince Bernhard and Standard Oil's Walter Teagle on the boards of its various branches. Bayer's Duisberg served as the head of its supervisory board. Joining Duisberg on the board was Fritz Termeer, who oversaw the construction of the IG Farben factory at Auschwitz, which ran on slave labor and participated in human experimentation. After the war, Termeer was sentenced to 7 years in prison for his participation in looting and enslavement of the camp prisoners, but was released in 1950 for good behavior, and in 1956 became chairman of Bayer AG, newly resurrected from the ashes of IG Farben. But this legacy of death is not some ancient relic of Bayer's distant past. Decade after decade, the company continues to be involved in scandal after scandal involving wanton environmental destruction, injury, and even mass murder.
Bayer accidentally funds study showing its pesticide is killing the bees and promptly denies those conclusions. A large-scale study on neonicotinoid pesticides is adding to the growing body of evidence that these agriculture chemicals are indeed harming bee populations, to say the very least.
Now, that, there's more to that, and you can download and see the entire clip by going to prn.fm. We're at the end of our program. Today, we focused upon GMOs and our food supply and the people controlling our seeds and foods and the merger of Bayer with and Monsanto. Now the karma is that Bayer stock is plummeting and Monsanto has lost a key lawsuit, and there's going to be thousands, I predict 30 to 40,000 more suits against it. But they can't sue Monsanto anymore because Monsanto is not Monsanto. The name has been changed. They're part of Bayer. So we're going to see that stock tank. Who's going to want to invest in a stock? All your different fund groups, retirement groups, pension groups are not going to take it because there's going to be one payout after another. My hope is that they are put into bankruptcy and insolvency. I helped lead the first march against Monsanto. If you remember, 7,000 people in this audience came to Union Square, where we held forth, demonstrating against Monsanto. And then 10,000 people marched, 8,000 from this audience in 10 days, from Prospect Park down to Washington, D.C. and Lafayette Park, where we concluded talking about the importance of organic, sustainable farming and the dangers to GMOs. The article was posted. Please download it and read it and share it. Also, take another look at Seeds of Death. It was shown over 80 times on Colorado Public Television, the most of any documentary in its history shown on that major PBS station, because people want to know. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.